Jerry, what is it that you like about this place?
Well, now that's hard to describe because it's the most beautiful place I've ever been in all my life. And our children are so beautiful, lovely classrooms, and they're so happy. You just can't imagine that all the hundreds of us here are so extremely happy. I wish I could describe the whole thing to you, but it's hard, but I just want to say this. I can't help but say
that none of this would have been possible had it not been our children.
The Jonestown Massacre is one of those situations that just keeps getting worse. The deeper you swim, the deeper it gets. This is not the way we normally do things on this podcast, but splitting up the People's Temple story is the best way to discuss the aftermath for the survivors, to give them their own voice. We went further into Jim Jones's life than, well, he deserves, but because we are an investigative show, we need to explore every angle. However, he's now irrelevant. This episode is all about the survivors. We will be playing clips from old news recordings and some interviews that may be disturbing to some. So yet again, listener discretion is advised. Hey guys, welcome back to a brand new episode of the Haunted Detective Podcast. I'm your favorite host, Kelsey Childs, but everyone calls me the paranormal Sherlock Holmes.
And I'm your favorite skeptic, Pamela J.
So we're going to reopen the case file for part two of the People's Temple. And this is, it's a lot. I did a lot of the writing for this episode. For those of you who don't know, I script everything out beforehand. So I have all of the information in front of me. And I was up until probably midnight doing it, and I could not fall asleep afterwards. Doing all the research, listening to all the testimonials, and even the audio recordings from within Jonestown, it gave me this really sick, twisty feeling in my gut, and I don't like it.
Yeah, hearing that stuff firsthand really can make you feel a lot of weird emotions.
So, Pamela, remember last episode we talked about John Victor and his parents, their fight to get him back from Jonestown?
Yes, that was such a horrible story.
Well, after the situation with John Victor escalated, Jonestown, it turned into like a prison of sorts. Ones where members of the temple were ready and willing to arm themselves with guns, machetes, and other weapons to fight anyone who dared enter their community.
So they basically had their own army, essentially.
Oh, yeah. And this army was willing to die for their cause.
That's insane.
While all of this was happening, two members of the Black Panthers, Huey Newton and Angela Davis, radioed into the residence to voice their support of Jim's movement. According to The Guardian, Angela, quote, told Jonestown inhabitants that they were at the vanguard of revolution and right to resist what she called a profound conspiracy against them. What a lovely misinterpretation of what was happening there.
That is a fantastic misinterpretation.
I know I've heard Angela Davis before, but...
I have too.
She was...
Where is she, like, from? Because I've heard that name many times. I don't know if it's a common name, maybe.
So, based on Google, and I'm quoting her page... Angela Yvonne Davis is an American Marxist and feminist political activist, philosopher, academic, and author. She is a professor at the University of California, and she was a longtime member of the Communist Party USA and a founding member of the Committees of Correspondence for Democracy and Socialism.
Oh, wow. Ugh.
Communism.
Interesting.
She was a very big part of the Black Panther Party. They were a political party and they were Marxist as well. And they basically fought for Black rights. And as quoted by Google, they were a Black power political organization mm-hmm. founded by college students. And they were a very big ally of the People's Temple back in California. And I guess even in Guyana, because Huey Newton and Angela Davis were both huge and famous members of the Black Panthers.
Mm-hmm. That's That's insane.
So yeah.
Like, genuinely, I feel like I'm going to say that a lot this episode, is that's insane.
The members started practicing something called White Nights, which was basically them simulating mass suicide. When the concern from family members became all too pressing for the government, a congressman from California, aka the only congressman to ever get anything done in the history of ever, Leo Ryan, decided to go figure out the truth for himself. With him, he took his legislative counsel, Jackie Speer, who worked closely with him, and a foreign affairs counsel, James Scollard. They brought with them two reporters from the San Francisco Examiner, Tim Reederman and Greg Robinson, one reporter from the San Francisco Chronicle, Ron Jabbers, one from the Washington Post, Charles Krause, an entire crew from NBC, producer Bob Flick, Bob Brown, a cameraman, Steven Sung for sound, and finally, a writer named Gordon Lindsay, who was working on a story set to be published in the National Enquirer.
It's one of those words that I
Why do I say it like that? Enquirer.
The Enquirer. It's like rural. Rural.
But it wasn't just media professionals that flew down. On a separate trip, concerned family members such as Tim and Grace Stone joined. Here's the full list of names. Howard and Beverly Oliver, Steve and Anthony Katsaris, Claire Bouquet, Jim Cobb, Wayne Petila, Bonnie Thielman, Sherwin Harris, Nadine Houston, Mickey Touchette, and Carol Boyd. Four of these people joined Leo on his plane with the media and his team along with two attorneys, Mark Lane and Charles Gary. The deputy chief of mission at the U.S. Embassy in Georgetown, Richard Dwyer, was there as well. Neville Annaborn was an information officer who joined the crew and was in charge of representing the Guianan government. So the thing to know is that, and we'll get into this a little bit more later, but you know, some people might be wondering, okay, why are they sending a representative of that government? Why aren't just, you know, the authorities going down there? Because technically right. those are U.S. citizens without South American passports.
I mean, that's a whole crew.
Yeah. But again, this is going to play into it a lot later. America and Guyana were in very close relations. It's unclear how or why, but...
Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things that like, oh, they're in good relations. Oh, how? Well, we don't
ask.
We don't really want you to know the answer. So, yeah.
So only Leo, Jackie and the 9-person media team was allowed to go all the way to Jonestown. Gordon Lindsay was not permitted for unknown reasons, which I'm sure we can probably guesstimate why cases like this, they don't really like writers being involved.
Yeah, it's not hard to really guess why Gordon wasn't allowed to go.
You know, while he was working on a story for the National Enquirer, he was also a freelance writer. And, you know, personally, for my grandmother's case, they had a freelance writer there with a media pass and mm-hmm. all the cops. Everyone was like, stay away from this guy. He's kind of a slime ball. So.
Oh, okay. Well. I mean, maybe he could have had ill intent.
I mean,
who knows?
I personally only heard good things about the guy that was at my grandmother's trial, but I don't know jack shit about Gordon Lindsay. So
the honesty.
I'm sorry.
I don't know jack shit about Gordon Lindsay. I mean, that's fair. We don't. It's fine.
And on November 17th, 1978, the crew arrived and was able to talk with Jim and interview a large portion of the cult. But the next day, a member of the temple tried to kill Leo by stabbing him, causing them to flee.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. Quick pause in recording. I'm going to play this testimonial from him from that moment.
Suddenly, Jones's men tried to knife the congressman.
I stood up and was had been talking with the two attorneys for the temple. Suddenly, the knife was around my neck.
You're convinced he was trying to kill you. Where was the knife?
In his very large left hand.
They got as far as the landing strip and were ambushed.
Oh, so he was talking. He was just talking to people. And all of a sudden there was a knife on his neck.
Yeah, he was apparently talking to the two attorneys. And one of the members who we'll talk about shortly came over and put a knife around his neck and wanted to kill him. So they were forced to flee.
That's insane. I wonder if the member was told to go do that then.
Oh, most definitely. But their visit was not in vain. 16 Jonestown residents joined them, although some sources say 12. I do have a list of the names. Brenda, Gerald, Tracy, Dale, Edith, and Patricia Parks. Larry Layton, Monica Bagby, Vernon Gosney, Juanita, Tom, Edith, Tina, and James Bogue, and Harold Cordell.
Wow. That's a lot of names, actually. That's a good amount of names.
Yeah, so Vernon Gosney had slipped Jackie Speer a note, basically pleading for help and trying to get her to get them out. And, like, aww, we want to leave with you. And they had to leave. They had to take with them as many people as they could because that note ended up in Jim Jones's hands.
That is so – that would have been such a scary thing to have to go through. Because remember, these guys, they gave over all of their money, like all of their information. Jim Jones knows everything about every single one of them. That's such a horrifying, horrifying thing to think about.
Well, Vernon also had to leave behind his 5-year-old son.
Oh my God. I hate that there were so many kids involved. Like, that is not, like, it's not sad for everybody else, but I just hate that there were so many kids who just did not have a choice to be there. And I'm like, fucking, oh my God. Oh, it makes me so fucking sad.
It is reported on FBI.gov that several members also left on foot. Leah wanted the group to leave together, survivors from the cult and all. But the thing is, the planes were small. They were little propeller planes. They could fit probably like 16 or so people, maybe less.
Yeah. And they came with a crew.
Yeah, and they had a weight limit.
So, like, you have to account for them.
But Leo, I would say, was an outstanding human being. And he was scared that anyone left behind would have a target on their back and be killed, or that they would be part of a revenge plan from Jones. A second airplane was needed to fulfill this goal, and this delayed their departure. Basically, Leo and his crew, they could have left. They could have fled a long time ago, but they stuck back with the people who fled and stayed with them, which I think you don't hear about that sort of thing very often when it comes to people defecting from cults and politicians protecting them.
I know. This is such a rare occurrence. And I, when learning about Jonestown over the years, I don't think I've ever heard of Leo and what he did. It's not talked about enough, at least.
Here's the thing. Actually, we'll get into that. Leo and his crew were already aboard their plane when a dump truck filled with armed men from Jonestown arrived at the airstrip and opened fire.
What?
A cult member named Larry Layton boarded one of the planes and started shooting people aboard. Leo's body was riddled with bullet wounds. Obviously, he didn't survive. And two photographers, Bob Brown and Greg Robinson, died while capturing the attack on camera, along with reporter Don Harris and an escaped cultist, Patricia Parks. Jackie Speer was shot 5 times but survived, along with escaped cult members Vernon Gosney, Monica Bagby, and a relative of one of the members, Anthony Katsaris. The sound tech, Steve Sung, was also among those critically injured.
Wait, did you say Larry Layton boarded one of the planes and started shooting people aboard?
Yes.
I thought he was one of the guys who escaped at first.
Yeah, he was.
So was he just, like, told to go and pretend to escape to kill the people who wanted to live?
That's really, you know what? That's a really good question.
Because I was like, wait, he boarded one of the planes, but I thought he just escaped from the cult, unless if he was told by Jim to go and kill everyone. Because how else would they have known where the planes and everything were? And
that's really true.
The van showed up.
I know this is speculative, but damn, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, that's, I mean, we're talking about Jim Jones. This guy is, he's unfortunately a guy that thinks of a lot, like everything. He thinks of a lot of different scenarios. So I wonder if he maybe planted this, especially since he knew that they would want to escape because one of his, I guess, followers put a knife to the guy's neck. So he knew that they would want to escape soon. And I'm sure he found out at some point that people were passing notes around about wanting to escape.
Oh, absolutely.
So he was like, no, I don't think you're going to.
Guys, just remember, Pamela and I are speculating. There's a lot that isn't talked about when it comes to Jonestown. Although it was never confirmed which cult members opened fire, the FBI released a list in their indictment. Please, please, please remember, that even the people who opened fire, yes, it was terrible, it was horrible, it was murder, it was a crime, it was a massacre, but these people possibly still have surviving relatives who were worried about them while they were in the cult. And they, in some really fucked up way, were also victims. So just have a little bit of empathy when you're listening to these names, because we're not telling you who they are for you to be, ah, fuck these people, da da da. It's,
yeah.
The entire thing, while utterly avoidable, if the US government had actually stepped in and done something, it's tragic, yeah. And it happened. And a lot of families are still trying to heal from this. So
the real villain here is Jim Jones.
Okay. Wesley Caro Breidenbach, Ronnie Dennis, Stanley Geige, Eddie James Hallman, Ronald Day Val James, Ernest Jones, Robert and Thomas Keiss, Anthony Simon, Ron Talley, Albert Touchette, and Joseph Wilson. I'm going to play a clip now.
One shot hit Bob Brown in the leg, I believe. I don't know what part of body. He screamed, ouch, and caught shit or something. I don't know what he did. And next thing I know, the guy came close and blew his brain off.
That was a audio clip of Stephen Sung talking about losing his colleague, Bob Brown. I'm just going to play one more clip from him. This is an interview from the Associated Press when he was still in the hospital recovering from his wounds.
I guess the real shame of my life is because my arms is ahead of my head. So the bullet missed the brain and hit my arm instead. And I didn't move and the blood is all over the place. So they thought I probably dead.
Imagine how terrifying that must be.
I can't even fathom. He went into survival mode at that point.
I mean, just like the sheer luck that the bullet didn't go through his arm, because we know that bullets have the ability to go through your skull, let alone his arm saved his life.
I can't even. And plus, while he's actively getting shot at, he just watched his friend die. Like his coworker, he just watched them die. I can't even imagine that.
So Jackie Speer is seen in a 9-minute long interview on ABC 7 News Bay Area talking about the attack. She briefly touches upon the trauma that she has had to come to terms with, along with the fact that they keep finding more bullets in her body that need to be removed. I guess a couple days before the interview, they had found another one in her arm, which was the fifth and final bullet. And she had made a joke saying, if they find any more bullets, then I'm sure I'm just manufacturing them. But,
aw.
You know, she seems pretty well put together. She went on to be a congresswoman in California.
Wow.
She did something good with her experience.
That's insane to me, actually. I mean, what a strong person.
The news reporter also asks her how she is doing after the fact. Because there was no indictment or investigation. The responsible government parties just opened and shut the case, which is probably why a lot of us haven't really heard of the Leo Ryan situation.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because I wish I had heard more about this, because this is absolutely insane and tragic.
I'm going to play a clip now.
As one who was at Port Kaituma Airport that day, and saw your boss and a very good friend die along with a number of other people, how do you feel about that?
It's very hard to deal with it because, you know, I walk around now with the scars and the baggage of that tragedy, realizing, was all of this for naught? Did these people die in vain? Did the U.S. congressman who was assassinated, the 900 people that died, did they all die in vain? Because our country, our government, is afraid to really look at itself and look at precisely why all of this happened, what they did wrong before we made that trip, and what went wrong during and after that trip. It leaves me cold.
She's so, not that she wouldn't be, but I love the way she talks. She's very well-spoken.
Yeah, I mean,
she has such a confidence about her when she's talking about this experience, this trauma.
Yeah, she's very well put together and she knows what needs to be done.
But I mean, she's right. They should have gone there with a lot of protection. I mean, they were bucking up against something that was,
they had no
honestly
idea.
Bigger than them.
They had no idea.
I know, but I feel like, and I'm not going to like pass any judgment, but from the US government side, how are you going to send these people
Well. According to the reporting, there were reports from the TSA, and other government branches and officials that there were dangers. But their warnings were not heeded, nor were they relayed to Leo and his crew. And I have just, not to cut you off, but I mean, that's...
No, it's
a perfect point, because we can't call out the government, but Jackie Speer can.
The State Department, for one, was totally irresponsible in their actions before we made that trip. We were never, ever warned about the dangers we might be encountering down there. The State Department, after the fact, made the statement we were, and after I made a statement that indicated that we were not, then all of a sudden they retracted their statement. But as a matter of truth, and that's what we're dealing with, there was never any kind of warning. Even though they had documents indicating there was guns being smuggled into that country, that there were drugs being smuggled in, and there were all kinds of other criminal activities going on. I can't understand why, except that there was a lot of politics. There was a lot of politics involved in our embassy's activities with the government of Guyana. 91% of the bauxite, the world production of bauxite, comes from Guyana. I don't know to what extent all of this was being weighed, but certainly it was.
Wow. Can I just get go fucking Jackie, dude.
My Lord and Savior, that Jackie Speer.
That's a bad bitch. Genuinely. That's a badass woman. She said, you are irresponsible. Yeah, you are, government. You sent these people to a dangerous ass fucking place. The place of Jonestown.
I mean, we know that our government doesn't really care about the people. They detest being representatives. They love being representatives, but they hate when they have to represent, right? And the thing that gets me is that they didn't even care about their own.
Yes. The fact that they knew, and obviously Jackie knows that now that they do, and they didn't care. They were like, well, bye. Like, how are you guys able to live with that on your conscience that you could have prevented these people losing their lives? Now, I'm also going to remember that this wouldn't even be happening if Jim Jones just wasn't a piece of shit.
Well, yeah, but I mean, just look at the case of John Victor that we talked about in part one. I mean, the government did nothing. They did nothing to step in. They did nothing to return this boy home. And does it surprise me that they didn't warn Leo? Ryan was a congressman who was willing to publicize and articulate things to the public that the government, the State Department, based on what Jackie was saying, didn't want the public to know. I mean, the media narrative at that point was that the people of Jonestown were crazy. They were psychotic. They were stupid people. They were idiots. And the government wanted it that way because they didn't want to take action. They didn't want to do anything. And whether it's because they had a relationship with the Guyana government or it's just because they didn't care, there was a warrant for Jim Jones's arrest. And they didn't think to send someone there to arrest him in collaboration with the Guyana authorities?
I don't think they wanted to deal with it because he wasn't on U.S. soil. So they're like, it's out of sight, out of mind.
They didn't even care when it was on U.S. soil. I mean, it was so obviously a cult at that point. And,
yes,
you know,
John
Victor's mom left. Right? She didn't feel safe. And you have to think she told someone. She told someone, she reported it to someone. And that's probably why it took her so long to get her son back. Because no one fucking cared. No one cared.
It makes me want to throw up because I know that, especially in the case of John Victor, that people were signing over their parental rights to Jim Jones. That he wanted to have rights over these children, which is such a fucked up thing to do. Like, what everything he did was fucked up. But to just go that extra level of fucked up to just control the youth, the children, the ones who don't really get a say because they're defenseless and some of the most innocent among our society, It's just absolutely so fucked. And I, oh God, I just, sometimes I just cannot believe that this even happened.
How did Jimmy Carter react to the Jonestown massacre?
I want to ask about Guyana. Do you think that the nature of that cult says anything about America? And secondly, what can the government do to avoid future Jonestowns?
Well, I obviously don't think that the Jonestown cult was typical in any way of America. I think these were people who became obsessed with a particular leader's philosophy. They were obviously misled. A tragedy resulted. It did not take place in our own country. In retrospect, all of us can deplore what did occur. It's unconstitutional for the government of our country to investigate or to issue laws against any group, no matter how much they might depart from normal custom, which is based on religious belief. The only exception is when there is some substantive allegation that the activities of those religious groups directly violate a federal law.
So basically, he answered it without answering it.
Yeah, I was about to say, he didn't answer the question.
Yeah.
All he said was like, yes, they followed someone that was a bad person. And we just, you know, that was sad. Great talk, Jimmy.
All of the practice for a mass suicide or white knight that the cult had been doing was finally coming into play. After the shooting at the airstrip, the gunmen returned to Jonestown and Jim ordered them to do something heart-wrenching and atrocious. They were to drink a fruit punch of sorts that was laced with cyanide to avoid the lashback from the airstrip massacre. Some sources say that Jim gunned down those who objected, while others were injected without their consent. I'd assume that some of those who were injected were children. A total of 909 people, including Jim Jones, who had shot himself, had died or had been murdered. More than 200 of those people were children.
200?
More than 200.
Holy shit.
When the authorities discovered the massacre, they also found a weapons cache, over 100 passports stacked together, and $500,000 in U.S. currency.
So that was, the $500,000 was probably all of their money put together.
He took their passports so they couldn't leave.
Yeah, he took everything that made them an individual.
So the shooter we talked about earlier, who had escaped with the other defectors and boarded the plane, Larry Layton, was brought back to the U.S. after the shooting on the airstrip and sentenced to life in prison. He was the only person, cult member, I guess, from Jonestown who was tried and sentenced, but he got out in 2002.
Oh, he what?
Yep. He got out. 2000. He's a free man.
Okay, that's not life, though. That's not life in prison, though. That's
no,
like what?
No, it is not.
20 something years? 30 years? No, that's more than 30 years.
I'm assuming that it took about 2 years of court proceedings and sentencing. So yeah, probably about that.
I guess I'm not sure what to say, because Larry, at the end of the day, could have been, I don't want to throw around the term brainwashed, but I do want to say heavily influenced by Jim Jones.
I believe it was Jackie Speer who had said in that interview, don't quote me on that, that he was brainwashing the cult members with drugs.
It makes me think that he was probably not, this is not an excuse for what he did, but I definitely think that he was struggling with that. Like, he had a heavy influence that probably told him to do it.
Like I said, we're not here to pass judgment. We're not here to say any of the cult members deserved anything.
No.
Even the ones that were involved in the shooting at the airstrip. No one deserves to die in that way. I mean, cyanide is a really, really unpleasant poison to die from.
So they took this cyanide and they drank it, but...
Or injected it.
What? Right, or forcefully. But what exactly happens to your body when you take cyanide?
So I actually asked my father about this because he's a doctor. and he interprets medical text better than anyone else I know.
I hope so. I hope so.
So it basically shuts your nervous system down. How it presents outwardly is anxiety, high heart rate, vomiting, itchiness. Their skin will turn red or blue.
Oh, wow.
And eventually their blood pressure just drops enough that they lose consciousness. But it is unpleasant. It is very, very unpleasant because, I mean, for those of you who work out, getting lactate acidosis when you're working out is not fun. But to like override every single cell and part of your body with metabolic or lactic acidosis, I would imagine is why their skin starts to get itchy. But I would imagine it feels kind of like having a panic attack. But I think the more fortunate part about cyanide is that the drop in blood pressure, I would assume that people lose consciousness before it gets really bad.
Wow. That's such a terrifying way to die.
Yeah. It's technically the state that they're in is called cellular hypoxia. So it's you have elevated oxygen levels.
So I know that it causes like confusion. So like I'm just sitting here, I can't help but think about the kids who were injected.
Oh yeah.
And they just don't understand like what's going on or why they all of a sudden are super itchy and their heart hurts and they're just super fucking scared, and then all of a sudden it's just
done. Over.
Like that's so God, I just cannot believe it. Plus over 200 of them were kids.
I mean, I would assume that even if they did survive this, the damage done is irreversible. It's such a dead end poison, you know? So one of the biggest rumors about the cultists was that they were all crazy. How else would they fall for such a scam and worship a man such as Jim Jones? I know that we're going to be talking about this more in depth next episode, but to kind of prepare us to get into those mindsets, I wanted to play some testimonials from survivors, whether they actually lived in Jonestown, and some of the testimonials are actually going to be from the people while they were in Jonestown. The first one comes from Leslie Wagner Wilson on Scovlin's YouTube channel.
I mean, did you see Jim Jones himself as charismatic, or how did you see him?
Jim was both charismatic and frightening, because on one end he could talk to you like he knew everything about you, that he could show you so much love, and then and then the next time he's telling someone to beat you because you slept during a service or you talked back to someone. So he was charismatic because he could speak and he could relate to anybody in that audience, whether it was a revolutionary, whether it was a professional, whether it was someone that was religious, atheist. He touched everybody. He had that ability.
The way that she is just able to talk about it so casually because it was just such a big part of her life and it's just part of her past. And it feels like she accepts that from her tone and her mannerisms. But I mean, to talk about getting beaten for like the smallest indiscretion in such a casual way, it hurts my heart.
Yeah. Well, it was just what they saw on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And your brain just comes to terms with it when you're watching it all the time. Not that it makes it easy or anything, but it's crazy what your mind can do when you're just in that environment all the time, 24/7.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Next, we'll hear from John Cobbs, who was a member of Jim's security detail. He spoke to the Associated Press about his experience in a 2-minute video. I'll be playing two clips.
The fact that we were able to be Jim Jones's personal guards for well over a year, we got to see everything that was happening in detail. We really got a chance to know him, and we didn't believe in him. We got to see him for really what he was, and we knew he was wrong. Oh God, I lost 11 total family members. Mother, 4 sisters, younger brother, 2 nieces. I lost a son that actually died before November. He died of natural causes. His mother and just a couple more nephews. Altogether, it's 11. Yeah.
So basically, he was saying that as Jim's personal guard, they saw him for who he really was and they didn't believe in him. And then the next clip, he says he lost 11 family members.
I honestly can't even fathom his loss and what he went through. And he said that he went through, or not that he went through, that he saw Jim Jones for who he actually was. That must have been such a surreal moment for him.
Yeah, I wonder what the moment was. Like, I would love to talk to him if he were ever willing and just ask, like, what was that moment for you that you said, wow, he's not a prophet. He's not a man of his word. He's not even a good person.
Yeah. He's just a monster. And he probably had like an oh shit, like, what the fuck am I about to do moment.
So we're going to listen to some clips of Vernon Gosney talking in an interview with KITV News. I said this like literally minutes ago, it feels like, but mm-hmm. He was one of the ones that left. He's the one that slipped the note. In the attack, he was shot in the stomach 3 times, dragged himself into the jungle to hide, and managed to survive.
Oh my God.
Well, there's a lot of things that I could have, wish I could have gone back and done differently, but I can't, you know. I can't take back the past. It was great terror and fear. I never thought I was going to get out alive.
Several tried that day.
There's not a day that I don't think about my son.
His 5-year-old son ended up being one of the victims of the poisoning.
Oh my God.
Leo's crew managed to actually get recordings. Here are some of the audio clips from inside Jonestown. And as disturbing as hearing from the survivors, I have no words for these. These are all from Long Reads, I didn't really look into what the YouTube channel is, but it's, I guess, an archives channel. So
what we're about to hear, these people, are they the ones who might have passed away because of Jim Jones?
Oh, all of them are. Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, my God. Okay. That's even more haunting.
Clip one.
By the way, I just wanted to mention also that I would have been scalded to death if it was not for Father, and I appreciate it and thank him very much.
I would have been scalded to death. What does that mean? Like, I would have burned in hell, or?
I think of scalding as in scalding hot water. So, like, maybe heat, like hot. I would have scalded, I would have burned.
It sounds like the threats of hell. Here's the next one.
Hello, family. It's such a joy and great pleasure being here because of Father's love. We are trying to make, and we are making, a place of refuge for all of you here. There's nothing at all that I have any holdings there. I do not want to go back in any way, shape, or form to the States. I love it here, and this is the place where all of you are going to be.
I hate to say it, it does not sound like he means what he's saying.
Yeah. They all have this, like, no, I'm going to wait till I say that.
It's 12:45 in the morning here, and we're all sitting around. We just had a meeting, and it's very warm, very pleasant this time of night. I'd like to say that Father truly saved my life a few days ago, and I'm sure that some of you have heard it over the radio, but it was a miraculous miracle. I wouldn't be sitting here tonight. I should be dead. And I really thank Father, because there's no one I could have called on but Father. And he came to me in that time. And I thank him very much.
So we're starting to see glimpses of, like, what they're calling him. And with that woman, we see, like, how she refers to him. And it only continues to, like, get worse.
Yeah. Father.
Hello, family. This is Kevin. I'd like to just express how happy and how nice it is here to be in the promised land, and how Father has saved each and every one of our lives many, many times. And I'm just so glad to be a part of this down here, to be able to work and build a land.
The laughter, the laughter. It's
I was going to say, I heard like a laugh.
Yeah, he laughed and then they laughed as if it was like an inside joke.
Oh, what the fuck?
This is Anthony, and I want to tell of a testimony that happened to me this week. We were down at the 50 acres underbrushing for our great burn this month in March when I was walking across a tree, and I fell off the tree on a stump that was pointed, and I fell with all my weight on it, and I should have been punctured in the chest right here, and it was only thanks to Father's love that I'm here today.
I mean, when you said brainwashed.
They're all saying something very similar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, if it weren't for Father's love, I would have been scalded. If it weren't for Father's love, I would have had something puncturing my chest.
Oh, there's more.
Hello, family. Greetings from a truly promised land prepared by Father. Now, for myself, as recently as 1 month ago, Father's picture saved my life from choking to death. And this has been the greatest challenge of my life, being able to work down here in the garden. Thank you.
Another one. Father's
picture. They're all saying the same thing.
It's like rehearsed.
Hello, family. I wouldn't be here today if Father hadn't saved me from a burning building. We are here in the promised land.
Well, it's almost
like it's the same thing.
Well, they're so drugged up. I mean, you can just
sound
like
a script.
Yeah, but you can hear the monotonous nature of their tone.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say beforehand when I was like, I'm going to wait to say that because they all have the same voice in a way.
Yeah. Okay, next clip.
Hello, everybody back in the valley. I've been driving a truck and working on construction down here. Just the other day while I was working, with electric auger bit, and it grabbed a hold of my pant legs, and just as I felt it going into my leg, miraculously the generator cut off and stopped everything. And I know that Father protected me this time as he's done many other times before since I've been down the promised land. And I'm really looking forward to when everybody can come down and share the beautiful communal living and the free country that we have here. And thank you.
And then I have one more.
Hi, this is Davis. I am really grateful to be a part of this family and to be able to have the privilege to come down to the promised land to help build a better society for the people. And also, I'd like to tell of a miracle that just happened to me recently. I was working inside of a well, and I was maddoxing, so a little rock that was inside a well. And turn around, I went to use the maddox, and the maddox slipped out my hand. And thanks to the love that Father has for us, the maddox just went over my head, and instead of coming down, hit me directly in the head.
I would just like to say that Jim Jones, from my understanding through watching this whole clip, it's, how long is it? It's about 12-minute video of interviews. I believe Jim was present for most of these, if not all of them.
Yeah. That doesn't surprise me at all.
You know, the thing that I wonder, they're definitely referring the father they're referring to. That's definitely Jim and not God, right? Because they weren't religious at this point.
Jim was God.
Yes. Yeah, he was the Messiah.
I noticed that they're not saying my or the. They're just saying Father.
Yeah.
Father was there for me. Father's love. They weren't saying Father was there for me. Father's love.
Yes.
So it makes me wonder, especially going back to that first one that we heard, which was from Leslie Wilson. She talked about how during services that you would get punished for dozing off or falling asleep during a service. I wonder if during the services that he was preaching about his own love and that he saves all, and that if bad things happen to you, it's because I say that they will.
You know what I'm going to do? For our season finale, I'm going to gather some audio recordings of Jim Jones, see if I can find his sermons and the recordings he had played on megaphones and speakerphones throughout the compound, and see if we can like discern if that was the message, which it seems like it was.
Yeah. It's just wild to me that they all had the same story, just different like tweets.
Same story, different font.
Yes, same story, different fonts. Yes, it was a tragic thing that happened to them, and they're like, "Father's love, save me."
But you know what? I kept thinking, and this might be fucked up of me, but the thing I keep thinking about listening to their testimonials is, well, none of that would have happened to you if you weren't at Jonestown.
Well, that's my point, is I don't think it did happen to them, because the one clip where there was laughter, I wonder if this was a joke.
No, I think... So that was recorded at 1 a.m. They had just had a big meeting about another miracle that had happened. I think that they were just so out of their mind, drugged up, tired, beaten, abused. I don't think they really knew at that point what was up and what was down. Because remember, this is November. And this is
right.
Days before.
But what were these videos for?
This was for from Leo's crew when they were interviewing people. I believe. I could be wrong.
I just didn't think, like, if it is from Leo's crew, I have this weird inkling that I think that they were, because I think that they did believe that he was Father and that his love was everything. But just the laughter in that one clip.
Oh, it happens again. It happens again after that. They all start cracking up, but it's maniacal. It's unhinged. It's, yeah.
I think they weren't respecting the reason why Leo was down there, and that it was almost like a joke, like, oh, what are you going to save us from? Like, you're all idiots. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, there was this like group mentality of like, we're going to do these videos and we're going to say everything's fine and Father saved me. But it was obvious that these were the same, like, it was the same script, just different stories.
Yeah, I mean,
that's why I'm like, I don't think they took it that serious.
I wouldn't be surprised if they were handed out scripts to memorize.
Yeah, I mean, that's a deep theory, I feel. But like, I don't think that it was taken seriously when they did these videos. Because if it was serious, it wouldn't be the same exact thing over and over again.
It's just...
with the random laughter in between.
It's so messed up. But
granted, we weren't there, so we're not sure.
I mean,
these are just little educated guesses.
Next episode is going to be psychology with Pam, and she's going to be deep diving into the psychology of it all. But yeah, I think I need a nap after this episode.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I was listening to those clips, not the ones of the survivors after the fact, but the ones of them in the compound, I guess you could say, the camp in Jonestown. And I just felt so detached. I just felt such a profound detachment and desperation there. And, you know, the one word, and I feel like a child throwing a tantrum by saying this, but it's unfair. It's unfair what happened mm-hmm. to them and what they were put through, especially the children. It is unfair.
Yeah.
It could have been prevented. It could have been stopped. What happened to Leo Ryan was unfair. What happened to his entire crew? I just, you know, their families loved them and cared about them so much that they flew down to Guyana to come and get them. Like, it's just,
there were so many opportunities that for the government to step in.
It's unfair. It's so unfair. It's,
yeah.
You know, thinking about everything going on in our government right now,
mm-hmm.
whether, you know, you're left or you're right or you're center, or you don't align with the political system like me, this stuff is still happening. The negligence, brushing things under the rug. And I'm convinced that's why they don't want us to have TikTok. Because imagine if there was TikTok at the time of Jonestown. You know, these family members would have been posting on TikTok. The government wouldn't have been able to regulate it like they were regulating the news coming from Jonestown. If there was any at all, I don't know. I mean, I know there was after the fact, but...
family members would have talked about, hey, my family member just went over to this group that, and I don't understand what's going on. Like, is anyone else relating to this? And then that would have just spread like wildfire, because then other families would have been like, yes, my brother is over there. Yes, my sister's over there. What's going on? Does anyone know what's going on? And then everyone would have started talking.
I petitioned the government hundreds of times. Oh, my son's there. He's only 6 years old. The government won't help me get back a minor. You know, the thing that I hate, and I know I say this all the time, I'm like, oh, I'm punk. And everyone's like, ha ha ha, that's funny. No, but like, unironically, I am punk.
Yeah.
And the thing about the punk revolution, I guess you could say, is they weren't, you know, people misconstrue the movement as, oh, they were communists. Oh, they were socialists. No, 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 no. They hated socialists. They hated communists.
Mm-hmm.
They hated gangsters. They hated skinheads. They hated Nazis. They were their own entity. They were not in accordance with the political system, any political system in the world. Some of them, you know, were scoundrels and they wanted just full anarchy, but there was a movement within the punk revolution. It's when you see the A with the circle through it, it's organized anarchy. And the way I interpret that through growing up aligning with it and doing research on it, you know, the music, films based on it, statements, all of this stuff, just growing up looking into it, organized anarchy is the chaos before the calm. It's the calm, the storm before the aftermath, right? And my thing is, obviously, even back in 1978, our political system was not working. It wasn't working. We should have been able to go over to Guyana and get those people and intervene and work with the Guyanese government to stop whatever happened. Like, close to 1,000 people lost their lives, including Leo's crew. And I'm like, it's not working. And, you know, organized anarchy is just the premise of, for any real semblance of change, you need chaos.
I mean, John could have been brought home. That five-year-old kid could have been brought home. The survivor's child could have been brought home. I mean, there was so many things that Jim was doing that should have been the last straw. He had a million last straws.
Yeah, no, he
and
did.
We just sat back. And after Leo... After the assassination of Leo and the cold-blooded murder of his team, that should have been more than enough to go down there and figure out what the fuck is going on.
There should have been an investigation into the State Department and why the State Department did not pursue Leo's crew in the way of, hey, just so you know, I don't know if you want to do something about this when you go down there, off the record, but they have guns. They have, it's like a militia at this point. We have documentation. We have proof. Maybe you shouldn't go down there. Maybe it'll put the cult members at risk. You know, so much, so fucking, I'm just like, you know, America's a great country. I'm not negating that we are very lucky to be here. We are very lucky to live in such a privileged country with such a good military, adequate to negligent police force. But
we definitely have some things we have to work on.
You know, we're not living in a communist country. We're not living in a dictatorship. No. We're not living in Ukraine, which is currently being demolished by Russia, and, you know, people there are living in fear, or any other war-torn country. But I feel like our government, there's too many dirty hands in the pot.
Oh, 100%. And I mean, Jonestown really shines a bright light on, I mean, especially what Jackie was talking about when she was voicing the absolute recklessness of the government and how they knew this information of that. They knew they had smuggled guns. They knew that there was bad stuff going on and they didn't say a word, and they let him get in the plane and they let his team get in the plane and go down there unarmed and not expecting an army. I mean, Jim created an army of followers.
He had people brainwashed. They were all in a way victims, just like you could say with Charles Manson's group. They were also victims, but, you know, victims that because of the damage Manson did to their brains probably could never be rehabilitated. But the thing that we forget is, you know, so many people, even when, you know, the reason we didn't talk about Charles Manson on this season is because, and Pamela, you know this, every time you post about Charles Manson, people are like, Charlie was innocent. Charlie this, Charlie that.
He didn't kill anyone.
The cult members did. Like, yeah, He fucking victimized these women. These girls. These girls who just needed some semblance of community and family and love, and they were broken, the broken wings of society. And it's the same thing that Jim fucking Jones did, was he took the broken wings of society, whether they were victimized because of the Jim Crow laws, because of racism, because of being a veteran. And of course, our country does not take care of our veterans. Mm-hmm. I mean, Pamela, you know, I don't know if you feel comfortable saying this, but you have someone very close to you that's a veteran and saw combat, and they don't give a fuck. So
absolutely,
Jim knew this. He knew this, and he targeted, it's the broken wing syndrome. He's targeted these people. He brought them close to his chest and basically had some like skin to skin, like, they're there, baby bird. I'm your mama now. And for me, I don't have words. I don't have words. Like, you know, on one hand, it's the cult and everything about it is so fucked up, but the government and their complacency and enabling and all of this fucking bullshit, It makes me so angry and it makes me scared.
Oh, what? Absolutely. And we're going to get into this a lot next episode, but cults form not because followers are insane or disoriented or crazy. They form because they're people who have the desire to have what they think would be a meaningful life. Like, they want a secure and purposeful life. And unfortunately, they get tangled up in cult life. And then, you know, X, Y, and Z can happen. And by X, Y, and Z, I mean like murdering people, murdering innocent people like Manson did. So and also for the record, Charles Manson is not innocent just because he had other people do his dirty work.
I would say with Charles Manson, and we'll get into this in a future season when I have the brain power to combat some of the comments we'll get.
I know.
You know, the most dangerous type of person is the person that can brainwash other people and manipulate other people. And I'm currently, I can't talk about it much. I'm building a case against someone that used to be in my life that is really good at manipulating and brainwashing people. And it is scary. It is so freaking scary. And I'm like, Jim Jones technically didn't kill anyone. There's no evidence that he shot, you know, he gunned down his followers who wouldn't comply. He gave them orders and they followed. But nothing is scarier than being a man or a woman who can convince someone else to kill themselves. Nothing is scarier. And our government is so worried about social media is going to be, the young kids are going to kill themselves because of social media. Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Over 200 young kids died because they killed themselves or were coerced or forced to kill themselves, whatever it was in Jonestown. The government didn't care then.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't give a fuck then.
And that's why it's so important to talk about this stuff, because I mean, and like I said, we're going to get into much deeper detail. I'm just touching the surface here. But when we talk about all of this in its entirety, and we're going to talk about how to identify these people so that you, who may not think that, oh, I would never fall for a cult leader. I would never fall for a
master manipulator. Have you ever been in an abusive relationship? Then you most likely would fall for it.
Exactly.
Me included.
And there's not a lot of differences, as we're going to learn, between those types of people, as a narcissist, an abuser, and a cult leader. There's not a lot of differences. So when Kelsey and I go into depth about this, we're also going to give tools. When you're listening to this, you're like, wow, that's crazy. You could meet one day. And that's not trying to be like, I'm not trying to scare you. It's so that you can be like, oh, that's a red flag. I'm going to make sure I keep you at an arm's length so that I stay safe. Or maybe you see your friend talking to somebody and you recognize, oh, hey, they're exhibiting the same fucking characteristics as Jim Jones. And I don't want to deal with that shit. So we're talking about this because it can spread awareness and it could help you.
It's so small too. Like, I was thinking back on a situationship I had last year.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment, it was like right the guy had canceled the second date. And after canceling, he had texted me and he said, when do you go to sleep? And I said, 11:30. Why? And
what a weird question.
And he goes, answer the phone when I call. That should have been it for me. It's my own work as to why that wasn't it for me. He then proceeds to call me. It goes to voicemail. He leaves us like, I just wanted to say goodnight. You know, not trying to knock on any gender, knock on any person, but it's stuff as small as that. It is as small as even the way a guy kisses you. It's as small as the way your parent looks at you. It's so minute and so difficult that, you know, some people can't even articulate, oh, this is narcissism or this is dangerous. This is sociopathy. They just think to themselves, oh, I have a dirty feeling when it comes to this person. And always fucking listen to that feeling. Always fucking listen.
Trust your gut.
I mean, a lot of these cult members, I'm sure eventually they were like, I have a dirty feeling when it comes to Jim Jones. And they didn't listen because they were not in, they were put in a situation where they couldn't be in the headspace to listen to that. Well, we're going to get into this next episode with Pamela, but I mean, if you want, dude, we can share some personal stories about like when we've missed red flags, because the last thing I want is for someone to feel called out in that episode, is for someone to be scared. What my goal is in, you know, in this is people to understand that it happens and it's going to happen and it's going to keep happening throughout your life. I mean, especially with our generation and millennials, I mean, it seems like narcissism is getting more malignant. Meanwhile, with, you know, Gen X and boomers, narcissism, they're good at hiding it, but
yeah, they really are.
But yeah, so if Pamela's comfortable, she'll share some stories. I definitely feel comfortable sharing some stories. Of course, please don't come asking us who it is, what their names are. We're going to change names for the sake of privacy and not getting sued. Love that.
Yay. Yeah, so there was actually this one instance when I used to be in food service, and I used to work a drive-through window a long, long time ago. And there was a guy that would come through, and I thought he was just like the cutest guy I'd ever seen.
You said there was a guy and I already got scared. Sorry.
Horrified.
Terrible. Terrifying.
And so just for the record, I was like 15-ish, 16-ish. So he would come through the drive-thru. I thought he was the cutest thing ever. And I'm like giggling and shit with my friends. And I'm like, oh my God, I wonder if he's going to come back. So he would come back day after day.
How old were you?
And I was 16-ish. Like I was like 15 or 16.
So underage.
Yes, I was a minor.
Okay.
And this guy came back and he gave me his number.
How old was he?
And it, well, that's the kicker. I found out later that he was 25.
Ugh.
And I was 16.
God.
So he would come through and whatever. He gave me his number and we started talking. Well, every time that I wouldn't text him back, he would call me and I would be in high school. So I wouldn't answer the phone and I would get out of school and he would be, I would have like 40 missed calls. I'd have 20 text messages and I felt so nervous.
Oh my
and
God.
I was like, what the fuck do I do? Do I call him back? So I didn't tell anybody because I was a little like scared. So I called him back and he.
Am I going to get in trouble?
Yes. And so he would scream at me and he would be like, don't you ever not answer the phone. And I was like, okay, like, I'm sorry. And he's like, tell me you love me. And I was like, I don't. Okay, fine. I love you. And so I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like I'm, yeah, literally, like I'm throwing up in my mouth just fucking thinking about it. And yes. And so then every time that happened day after day after day after day, he would call me, he would text me, and then I would not answer. He would yell at me and then I would have to do something to make him feel better. And then I barely saw this guy like in person. Because I was so scared of seeing him in person because he was treating like this over text. And a lot of people were like, well, why don't you just turn off your phone? I'm like, because he knows who I am and like where I live and I'm scared. So there was moments like that where the reason why I shared that story is because there were moments where it's like, hey, why don't you just turn off your phone? Like, obviously he's treating you like shit. He's three times your age, like just not three times, actually just exaggerating, but he's super old, like get away from him. I'm like, he's going to kill me. And so every time I wouldn't answer the phone, he'd be like, you're going to die. You're going to die if you don't answer the phone. And then he would scare me. And then the next minute he'd be like, I love you so much. Like, you're going to be such a strong woman one day. Like, it was such a weird, fucked up thing. But there was a weird part of me that thought that he actually liked me and that he actually cared about me. But why would I think that if he was talking to me that way?
Trauma.
And so it ended up being all my friends were like, just turn off your phone. Just turn off your phone. Just leave. Just go. So I'm like, it's not that simple because there's that underlying fear and anxiety that keeps you there. Now, thankfully, mine ended great because he went to jail and I never heard from him again. So not because of me. There was no case involving me. Whatever the case was, if it was another woman or a girl, I hope that they're okay. I haven't really tried to look into that. But you know, he's in prison somewhere.
So, for something, probably stalking or something, murder, or
I
like,
don't know. I'm
public
just
indecency.
Just glad he's gone. But there's things like that where it's like you don't recognize those things. I didn't know that that guy in the drive-thru who was super nice and charismatic was going to be a fucking psychopath.
Yeah, well, tune in next episode to hear more stories like this from us and just to learn some psychology. But without further ado, we're finally closing the case file on the People's Temple. And I say finally because this has been a lot to research and learn and talk about. And I need a break and a big stretch.
Yeah.
Maybe a hot shower. But yeah, don't forget that our episodes come out every Monday at midnight. So as soon as on Sunday night, the clock strikes 12, throw off those glass slippers, scream, I'm coming, bitch! And come listen. But without further ado, leave us a nice review. Check us out on social media. The link will be in the bio. And peace out, guys.
We love you.
Peace out, Girl Scout.